have a lot of things I want to get off my chest.
We just gotta do what we do. We play like we play. We be us. We be special. We smell greatness. We finish strong. Yes, from the top.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Welcome to the Something to Say radio show on WGSO 990 AM and streaming live on WGSO.com. No subjects are off limits, so call in with your questions or comments to 504-556-9696. And now, here are the hosts of the Something to Say radio show, BJ Rust with Mike Hinson.
All right, welcome everybody to another edition of the Something to Say radio show on WGSO 990 AM and streaming live on WGSO.com. No Mike Hinson with us tonight. He had a few things that he had to get taken care of, so I will man the ship by myself. I think I can manage this, I hope. We'll see, fingers crossed. All right, well, the biggest news that we need to get to is that it is official. Brian Kelly is the new LSU football head coach, and boy, oh boy, did he get paid. He got a 10-year contract for $95 million, and there's also a longevity bonus that will push the total compensation up to $100 million. And the way it breaks down, he'll get $9 million the first year, and then the pay will increase in increments through 2031. The only thing that's pending is approval by the LSU Board of Supervisors and a background check, which pretty sure that all those things are going to happen. There's also added incentives in the contract. And let's see here. He gets a longevity bonus that'll pay him $500,000 every year as long as he remains LSU's coach on July 1st. He also receives $500,000 if LSU makes a bowl game, which probably is going to happen because the only time in the last 20 years they haven't was last year, and that was because they had a self-imposed ban on themselves. There's other bonuses that he gets. After LSU's first SEC championship, his annual compensation will increase by $250,000 for the remainder of the contract. If they win a national title, he gets a raise of $500,000 every year. He'll also receive a one-time payment of $75,000 if LSU appears in an SEC championship, and $150,000 if they win the game, and $500,000 if LSU captures a national title. Let's see. And then some of the other little, the lagniappe that he gets will be, he gets two courtesy vehicles or a two-car allowance worth $1,000 a month. He gets an interest-free loan for up to $1.2 million in order to buy a house. He gets 50 hours of travel per year on private planes. Also, relocation funds and the cost of his buyout from Notre Dame. And nobody knows exactly what that is because they're a private school. And here's some of the interesting things that I found in it. If he gets fired without cause, the school will owe him 90% of that salary. And they'll also owe him the entire remaining salary and the prorated longevity bonus if LSU fires him without cause after he's won a national title. The only way that they wouldn't be on the hook for anything that he does is if they decide to fire him, if he does something, if there's cause for him to be fired, you know, whether or not there's scandal or something like that. But crazy, crazy money. And, I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about him, but I know that he's been very successful with Notre Dame. And, let's see how it works out here. You know, I think there's a world of difference between the SEC and Notre Dame, but You know, well, it's... He has an overall record as a head coach of 263 wins, 96 losses, and 2 ties. He's been at Central Michigan. He was Cincinnati's head coach in 2006. He came to Notre Dame in 2009. So, you know, he had a national title game appearance whenever they got routed by Alabama. Here's the other thing though: he did defeat LSU twice in bowl games. So, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a good deal. It may not be the sexy pick like Lincoln Riley was going to be, but I think maybe in the long run we're probably better off, because it seems the way that Lincoln Riley went about business would be that he would probably use LSU to jump into the NFL, and who knows how long, how long he would truly be with the Tigers. But Brian Kelly, he was 92-39 with the Fighting Irish, so great numbers. Let's see. We need to see how well he can recruit. And from the rumors are that he's wanting to bring his coordinators with him as well, which I think is a good idea, because then you already have that familiarity with it. And overall, I think it'll just be a great move for LSU. And I've seen a lot of people that are upset about it, because he's not, everybody loved Coach O. You know, he was a Louisiana guy, and he loved being the head coach of LSU. But let's be honest, some of the things that was going on over the last few years, yeah, they won a national title, but I'll be honest with you, I think anybody could have coached that team to a national title. Some of the scandal stuff is not good, and turning your back on some of that stuff, it's just not a good deal. And truthfully, had it been probably any other team or any other school, I think he would have been let go before now, regardless of a national championship or not. Those type of things just can't go on. So, I think it's nice. It's time to turn the page and get a fresh start, and hopefully things can start moving in the right direction next year. So, some of the quotes from today's press conference that Brian Kelly had was that he stressed that he was drawn to LSU because of the alignment from the university president to the athletic director on down. And he was quoted as saying, "I came down here because I wanted to be with the best. The resources here are outstanding. It starts with the alignment, excellence, the standard of expectations. You're looked at in terms of championships here, and I want that. I want to be under the bright lights. I want to be on the Broadway stage. That's what my passion is. So yeah, that's part of the draw. There's no doubt about it." He also said that he had no intentions going into the season of leaving Notre Dame, but the opportunity was just too good to pass up, and I can completely understand that. Even though Notre Dame is one of the most storied colleges in sports, it's still not, as far as football is concerned, the level of competition that the SEC brings, and not only that, of being with LSU, who's there's always up at the top of the SEC divisions, and always relevant, typically always in the top 25, but this year not so much, but it's okay. And like I said, hopefully things start moving in the right direction, and this is just the beginning of some good years ahead for the Tigers. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Cowboys and the Saints, and talk some injury report, maybe with the change in quarterback. We got a lot to talk about. So we'll come back and right after this. Where do I take this pain of mine?
stays right by my side.
What's your plan for tomorrow? Are you a leader or will you follow? Are you a fighter or will you cower? It's our time to take back the power. What's your plan for tomorrow? Are you a leader or will you follow? Are you a fighter or will you cower? It's our time to take back the power. What you gonna do when they show up in black suits on your street and our mid boots? Gonna say when they strip your rights away and the tax man makes you pay.
All right, welcome back to the Something to Say radio show on WGSO 990 AM. Before we get to the Saints and Cowboys preview, we'll do that in the next segment, but I wanted to talk about Major League Baseball. And tonight at 11:59, the collective bargaining agreement is set to expire, which means that there's more than likely going to be a lockout starting tonight at midnight. The two sides, the Players Association and MLB, met today in Irving, Texas. They met for about 30 minutes, which I don't know. How, you know, is that really is that really taking a meeting when you did it for 30 minutes and something that's that big? But whatever. You know, is what it is, as they say. It said that they met for 30, from what I'm reading, this according to MLB.com, they met for 35 minutes, and then talks broke off for an hour, giving both sides to meet with their own for further discussion. That was followed by a 45-minute meeting between Deputy Commissioner Dan Halem, Rockies owner and chairman of the league's labor policy, Dick Monfort, the Major League Baseball Players Association's lead negotiator Bruce Meyer, and pitcher Andrew Miller, one of eight players on the union's executive subcommittee. According to sources, the Players Association hasn't moved away from its original proposal from May, which seeks a major overhaul of the sports economic system, including core components that have existed in the CBA for decades, the first being six-year free agency, and that started in 1976, Super 2 eligibility, that's been in every agreement since 1990, and revenue sharing, which has been part of every agreement since 2002. The Players Association wants a significant reduction in revenue sharing, which would make it more difficult for small market teams to remain competitive. Absolutely, you know, that's something that I don't really care for. Because if you don't have that, teams like the Royals aren't winning a World Series. Within the last 10 years, they have. Because essentially what you're going to turn teams into is the Tampa Bay Rays or the Marlins, things like that. And it has worked somewhat for the Rays. The Rays still haven't won a World Series, but they've been successful. But essentially what they're doing is they're just grooming star players to get traded and move on to other teams and then be successful there and get their big paydays. And I don't really agree with that. Let's see. They are also, they're wanting the eligibility of service time for free agency to move from 6 to 5 years, which that one I can see. I don't have a problem with that because, you know, you get these kids that come up and they're rookies. And, you know, they're locked into whatever they're locked into unless they renegotiate their contract. They're locked in for 6 years. And, you know, some of these kids are worth a heck of a lot more than what they're playing for. And although it does make it nice and it keeps payrolls down, you have to think, like we've talked about on the show before, like these kids in the minor leagues, unless they sign a really big signing bonus for, you know, whenever they were drafted, they're not making much, you know, when I say much, they're not making hardly anything, you know, they're making like $30,000 a year. And, And that, you know, a lot of them have second jobs in the off season, you know, and it's just, you know, when they get to the big leagues, yeah, they get a significant bump up, but it's not comparatively speaking, it's not on par with what some of the players that have been there for a while are making. And chances are good that if these, you know, some of these kids are a heck of a lot better than what some of these veterans are. And it's just, there needs to be some type of balance, I think, with that. I don't know what the answer is, but I believe that there does need to be balance with it. And the other thing that has seen a little bit of movement is the expansion of the postseason. And that I don't necessarily have a problem with. I don't want to go too far. Like right now, I think what I was reading was that they're wanting to go from 12 to 14 teams, which that's fine. But at some point, like, you got to cut it off. I don't want it to get like where the NBA or even the NHL, and I love the NHL, but it gets to where, you know, 65% of the teams or 60% of the teams in the league are in the postseason. It takes what makes special about making it to the postseason. It takes that out of it. I get their point. The more teams that they have in the postseason, the more playoff revenue, TV money that they can create. But I think it also is going to take, it's going to take some, you know, it'll take away from the game, because, you know, some of these teams then, when they know that, we don't need to win the division or be one of the top two non-division winners in the league, we just have to squeak in and get into the playoffs. They're not gonna be as aggressive when it comes to making trades and free agency and things like that. And I think that, you know, that's part of what I enjoy about baseball is, you know, you want to see your team go after the big free agent and you know, bring that guy to your team. I mean, I think that's all part of it. But you know, there's another couple. The other thing being the universal designated hitter, which I think is a foregone conclusion that's going to happen. You know, there was a stat I really didn't think about, but it adds 15 everyday jobs for hitters, and the average salary for a designated hitter in this year was $9.2 million. So there's a lot more than just, you know, saving an opportunity for pitchers to get hurt. There's also merit for them to make more money, and then you have players like Albert Pujols. It's not just limited to playing in the American League; they can play in the National League as well. And then another one, which I'm fine with, is the increase to the minimum player salary. I don't see any reason why not. You know, I know that all the owners cry hard times, and somehow I just don't buy into it. You know, even with this pandemic and everything else, I don't think that they're taking a huge loss by any stretch of the imagination. So, all right, well, let's take a break. We'll get some news. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Saints and the Cowboys, and then we'll wrap things up with some Florida Man. So stay right here. We'll be right back. To the Something to Say radio show on WGSO 990 AM and streaming live on WGSO.com. Don't forget, we still got one more month left of our 75th anniversary. And if you, we have become a not-for-profit station. So if you choose to get involved, you can go to WGSO.com and you can find out all the information on how you can get involved. And you can always just click right on the donate button. And that'll take you where you need to go. And any little bit helps. Trust me, I know. So head on over to WGSO.com to find out a little bit more about that. All right. So Cowboys and Saints. Prime time Thursday night. I, you know, I'm just hoping that we can have a better showing than we had last week against the Bills, and I believe we will, for multiple reasons. First being that it is, I don't know if it's official, but there's a lot of sources that say it's official that Taysom Hill will make his first start at quarterback this year on Thursday night. And he has practiced all week, and he's been a full participant in practices, even though he has a partially torn plantar fascia that's kind of kept him, well, it's kept him on the shelf really since week 10. So it'll be great to have him back, and hopefully he can right the ship. You know, we still have, you know, as bad as things seem, we're still right there in the hunt for a playoff position. And like we've talked about at the beginning of the year, I really didn't have any expectations of the Saints winning the Super Bowl this year. But I thought that getting to the postseason was very realistic, and you know that's really where you with everything that they've went through, and the salary cap issues that they had, and Drew retiring, I think that's really a best case scenario, and something that you can be proud of, that you've overcame all those things to still be one of the best teams in football. And I think that Coach Payton has done a fantastic job this year with the hand he's been dealt. And, you know, you never know. You know, that's the thing, is you never know what can happen when you get to the postseason. So that's all you can really shoot for at this point. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about the injury report real quick. And it looks like, okay, we got three people that have been ruled out for tomorrow. Marcus Davenport, Kay Pass is out, and Caden Ellis is also out. So that hurts a little bit on the defensive end front, because that leaves us with Granderson and Turner, I believe, as our only defensive ends for tomorrow. And that's something that I think is going to be really important, is they're going to have to get pressure on Dak Prescott, and he's going to be a little bit limited with his wide receivers, because I know Cedric Wilson's going to be out. Amari Cooper has just been reactivated from the COVID list, but who knows where his, you know, how he's feeling, and you know how his stamina is going to be for the game. CeeDee Lamb was in concussion protocol, but he was a full he was a full go all week. And Ezekiel Elliott, his knee was a little banged up, but he was a full go all week. So, the other wide receiver, Malik Turner, he's been sick and he did not participate today and is questionable for tomorrow. So they could be pretty short at wide receiver. So, you know, that's something that could be huge. And what makes it even more important then is that our defensive line steps up, our linebackers step up, and make sure that Ezekiel Elliott doesn't have a big game and puts the pressure on Dak Prescott to throw the ball. And you know, and then it goes back to putting the pressure on him physically, to have to force his decisions and make him make quick decisions. So I think that's really going to be the biggest, for me, the biggest key to the game, because, you know, we'll have Mark Ingram back. We'll have Taysom Hill at quarterback. I don't think he's going to be running as much as what he normally would be with having the foot injury. Alvin Kamara, he's practiced all week, but in a limited fashion, so he's questionable for tomorrow night. But I truthfully believe he'll be playing. Ryan Ramczyk and Tron Armstead, neither have practiced the last 2 days. Tron Armstead hasn't practiced all week, but is questionable for tomorrow, and Ramczyk is questionable for tomorrow as well. So those two guys are huge. Also, I mean, those are guys that we're going to have. In order to establish the run and take the pressure off of Taysom. So, you know, like I said, let's just see what happens. And I think really it's important in this game that we get ahead early and stay ahead, instead of getting down by a couple touchdowns and then having to fight and claw our way back. We're not in a position to be able to do that with all the injuries that the Saints have gone through this year. It's just not it's not conducive to try to make a mount a huge comeback every game, you know, be down by two or three touchdowns in the third and fourth quarter and come and claw your way back in. You just can't do it. So hopefully with the change in quarterback with Taysom, it gives them a little more energy and brings a little bit more life to the situation, because watching that game against the Bills, there wasn't much life in anything that was going on. So I would like to see that. And you know, it's nice Ty Montgomery's back, Mark Ingram's back. Hopefully, fingers crossed. Yeah, I think Alvin's going to play. I wouldn't count on him having the workload that he normally has. I think that it's I think if you cut that in half, it'd probably be best. But you know, there's another weapon out of the backfield for Taysom to throw to, and I think that's really important, because I know Deontay Harris has been officially suspended, but he has appealed that suspension. I'm pretty sure they haven't had a ruling on his appeal yet. So that would mean until there's that's been addressed, I believe he can play. So, you know, that helps. But, you know, we got to have big games. Marquez Callaway is going to have to get open. Kenny Stills is going to have to get open and catch the ball. You know, it's just – that's part of it. And, you know, I feel bad for Trevor Siemian, because I felt like the first couple games I really couldn't put that on him, because the receivers were just dropping passes left and right. And he wasn't throwing necessarily bad balls. But then once the video – I feel like once the video of him and what they – you know, how the Saints were using him, once that video was made available – that was pretty much the end of it, because he wasn't making his decisions quick enough. And that's so important in the NFL. If you've waited 3 seconds, you've probably waited two seconds too long to get rid of the ball. So, I think that's so important. And, you know, hopefully and the thing is the times that Hill came in and threw the ball when Trevor Siemian was quarterback, it just seemed different. You know, there was zip on his ball, and the big thing with him is just making the right decisions. And maybe with him having his foot banged up, it's going to make him a little less apt to go run and, you know, do something that'll get himself hurt, and make better decisions and be more conscious of what he does with the football. So I think that's going to be really important. And, you know, like we talked about, the defense is going to have to step up. They've given up 355 yards rushing in the last two games to Philadelphia and Buffalo. And that's not the Saints defense that we've came accustomed to. I mean, hell, I think it took a couple of years for somebody to get 100 yards rushing with this group. So they're going to have to step up and play the game that we know that they can play. And it's not going to be easy, because the Cowboys have a great 1-2 punch with their running backs, with Zeke Elliott and Tony Pollard. Zeke Elliott has over 700 yards rushing, and Tony Pollard has over 500 yards rushing. So, you know, both are having a great season. And the Saints have their work cut out for them. There's not going to be any breaks, so they're just going to have to take care of business. And then, you know, like I said, also just to recap, they're going to have to put the pressure on Dak Prescott and make him just like, you know, we can't hold the ball so long. We're going to have to make him, number one, it starts with good, good coverage. And then we got to get to him, you know, make him feel the pressure every single down. And if we can do all those things, if the Saints can do those things, then I think that we can pull one out tomorrow night in the Dome. So, all right, well, let's take a break, and we can come back, and then we'll wrap things up with a little we'll go ahead and do a Florida Man edition. So we'll make our trip, our weekly trip to Florida. So stick around. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back to the Something to Say radio show on WGSO 990 AM. It is time to make our weekly trip to Florida. So without any further ado,
down to Florida, we welcome you to the Sunshine State. They're kicking back and soaking up the rays every day in Florida.
All right, our first Florida Man story comes from News 13. I don't know where News 13 is. That's all it says. But anyways, just wanted to make sure that that I'm stating my source. So this comes from Clearwater, Florida, and the headline is Florida Man Arrested After Sitting on Woman to Use Gym Equipment, deputies say. A Clearwater man was arrested Thanksgiving morning after getting into an altercation with a pair of sisters over using gym equipment, according to the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office. And I think we need to have a tally board on how many stories come out of Pinellas County, because it seems like there's at least one every week. An affidavit states that the sisters were using an exercise machine while the man, identified as 78-year-old Robert Edward Dvorak, was waiting for his turn. Authorities said the man then sat on one of the women to use the machine instead. When the other woman told Dvorak to get off her sister, Dvorak pushed the woman away. Deputy said Dvorak admitted to pushing the woman, and witnesses said he was the aggressor. He now faces a charge for simple battery. I mean, I've been to the gym. I haven't been to the gym in a while. However, I used to go to the gym quite frequently, and I don't know what gym he goes to where that's the only machine or whatever that the person was using. There's usually multiple of them. And if it is the only one, I don't know why in the hell you couldn't just go do something else until that woman was finished. But, you know, thank him for making our Florida Man stories for this week, though. So, all right, let's not leave the ladies out, because there's a lot going on with the Florida women as well. And let's see, this comes from Newsweek, and a Florida woman was charged for giving naked lap dances to senior citizens. A 35-year-old Florida woman is facing criminal charges for allegedly giving unsolicited naked lap dances to senior citizens in a private home. Heather Cruz allegedly entered a Citrus County home located in the state's West Coast Central on November 21st. She then got naked before grabbing and hugging the homeowner, WFLA reported. One of the house residents reportedly told her to stop, but instead she allegedly sat naked upon the laps of two of the home's other residents. She told one of them, "You like it," police said. Several of the residents were over the age of 65. When two of the residents tried to remove Cruz from the house, she allegedly grabbed one of the residents' crotch and made sexual remarks. Police eventually arrived and ordered the woman to put on a shirt. After they handcuffed her and began placing her in the back seat of the patrol car, she allegedly kicked an officer in the chest while attempting to close the car door. When police tried to put her into the back of a different patrol car, she kicked that officer in the chest as well. Authorities charged Cruz with three counts of battery on persons 65 years of age or older, two counts of battery on a law enforcement officer, one count of resisting an arrest with violence, burglary with battery, exposure of sexual organs, as well as battery, and a partridge in a pear tree. Just kidding. WFL reported. She was sent to the Citrus County Detention Facility and held on a bail amount of $48,000. I mean, I don't even understand. I guess this lady just went into somebody's house and to do lap dances. I mean, I've never even heard of anything like that, but, you know, whatever. And the sad part is, looking at the mugshot, she obviously is mentally unstable, but she's not a bad-looking lady. I don't understand why she would need to just randomly go into people's houses to do stuff like that, but whatever. All right, and our last story will be another Florida woman. And this comes from News 5 WKRG. And the headline is, Florida woman arrested for selling neighbor's cars for scrap, affidavit says. St. Petersburg, Florida police department arrested a woman for stealing and then selling her neighbor's cars for scrap. Rosalie Baker, 55, of St. Petersburg, allegedly tried to sell her neighbor's 2001 BMW and 2000 Ford F-150 to a scrapyard in Hillsborough County. That's according to an affidavit from SPPD. Baker allegedly took the car and truck and contacted a buyer from Small Planet Recycling, LLC. She pretended to be the owner to sell the vehicles for scrap, and she was arrested on Thanksgiving. According to St. Petersburg police, Baker and a representative from Small Planet completed a bill of sale, a derelict motor vehicle form, and a request to cancel a title for the BMW. She did the same for a silver Ford F-150. Baker gave her Florida ID number and a thumbprint on the canceled title form, then got $300 for each car. The car and truck were then towed to a salvage yard where they were listed as stolen while in the yard's possession. The affidavit states, due to the Salvation Yard's location, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office was notified of the stolen vehicles. A latent fingerprint was confirmed by a print examiner, according to police. The owners of the BMW and the F-150 intend to press charges. She was arrested on six charges, faces two counts of felony dealing in stolen property, two counts of felony false verification of ownership, and two counts of felony grand theft of a motor vehicle. She was assessed at $130,000, according to, you guessed it, the Pinellas County Jail. Go figure. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. We're going to have to step aside, get on out of here. And until tomorrow, let's just play Gloria. Something to Say Radio Show content, go to somethingtosayradioshow.com. Follow us on Twitter at S2S Radio Show, and you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/somethingtosayradio.